So we're on Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis, and we finished the sugya of Roei Bakar, if you recall, and we came to the conclusion that that there might be any number of reasons why the rabbis were motivated to add an extra year, an extra month, excuse me, to the year, and it might not be that they are adjusting and coordinating the months with the weather conditions. So really the weather conditions of Cheshvan, which are a little bit colder, are going to manifest themselves in the month of Tishrei because they added an extra month. And that was the concern of the Kohen Gadol. Then at the bottom of Yud Ches Amud Beis, we had a sugya called Kaposik Vitani, and we came to the conclusion that the halacha that says that the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to be miyabem his late brother's wife because she's an almana, that would apply even in the case of an almana min ha-erisin, because in Yibum, the law of Yibum applies both in almana min ha-nesuin and almana min ha-erisin. The only difference is the almana min ha-erisin is still a basula, and therefore if the Kohen were to be miyabim her, although he violates the law of almana lo yikach, but he does not violate the essay of hu isha bipsula yikach. So in the case of almana min ha-erisin, we reduce it from a lotase to an essay, and that has great significance, because if his marriage, his yibum to the sister-in-law is only a violation of a losaseh, and then we apply the principle of esse docha losaseh. That means that the essay of yibum would override the lotaseh of almana lo yikach, and she's still a besula because she's an almana min ha erusin. So there's no essay. So the Gemara answers that we're worried about bia shnia, that the Chachamim were afraid that he would continue to live with her even after consummating the marriage on the first round. Now, on the first round, we have an essay of Yibum, and that's going to be Docha, the Losa Seval Manalo Yikach. But on the second round, there is no longer an essay of Yibum, so there's nothing to be Docha, the Losa Seval. Therefore, with the second Bia, he would violate the Isur of Almana. So the Rabbanan instituted that Zera, and they said, therefore, he should not be Miyabim, his sister-in-law. And that was the last sugya that we did yesterday. So let's see where we're up to today. We're on Daf Yud Tes Amud Aleph. And if you count down from the top, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 lines down from the top.
At the first Bia, isn't she his wife at that point?
Correct.
Then why is it matter about the second Bia? Why would that even come into play?
Because the Iser of Almana Lo Yikach applies not just to the marriage, but to every single Bia.
Really?
In other words, any time a Kohen, it's an amazing thing, I mean, it's a pretty severe thing. Let's say a Kohen Gadol is married to an Almana, or let's say the case of a Kohen Hedjot that's married to a Grusha. It's not just the original marriage that's prohibited, but every single bia, every consummation for the rest of their married life is a violation of Allah.
Wow. Okay.
We had in our shul, when I was growing up in Flatbush, we had a couple that he was a Kohen for sure, and we believed whatever for sure means right today in our day, because I don't know where the Cheskes Kohuna is. And we had reason to believe that his wife was a grusha. So I don't know if you've ever seen that, you know. You know, the attitude of the halacha in that marriage is that every single time they consummate their relationship, they violate a lav d'oraisa. I mean, that's pretty severe. Listen, I have to tell you this, Jerry. Brooklyn in 1950, you know, and I'm even going early, was not the same as Borough Park in 2020, if you follow me. I don't know if you could have counted the men in our shul that are Shomer Shabbos on one hand. I think you could have, and you still have a few fingers left. The president of the shul used to jangle his coins on Shabbos on the way to shul. He was the most lovely guy. I mean, I was crazy about him, but he didn't know an al from a base. You know what I mean? That's what life was like. So you come from Toronto, from a community that's full of B'nai Torah, right? And B'nai Torah know that Grusha is not allowed to be married to a Kohen, but you know, that wasn't public knowledge back in the day. Many of the people who davened in that shul would have davened up the block in this massive conservative temple on Ocean Avenue, which still stands, but it's pretty empty, unfortunately. There are no conservatives left, really. The children just went their own way, if you know what I mean. Hopefully not the BDS way, but they went their own way. And the people who davened in our shul, you know, the kasha was always, why don't you daven in the conservative shul? You can sit next to your wife, and so forth and so on. It's an abridged service. And so forth and so on, but they loved my father. If not for the connection to my father, they wouldn't have davened in an Orthodox synagogue. Some of them prayed in an Orthodox synagogue because they remembered their grandparents who prayed in an Orthodox synagogue. So where are we up to now? Five lines down from the top of page Yutes Amud Aleph. And the Mishnah, in this part of the Mishnah, this is the middle part of our Mishnah, addresses the issue of Avelus and Levayas HaMes for the Kohen Gadol. Now, Levayas HaMes is very tricky because the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to be Metami LeMes. All the other Kohenim could be Metami to their Zion Krovim, but not the Kohen Gadol. If we allow him, the Kohen Gadol, to be Malave, his own relative to the final interment, then he might be tempted as a result of the emotion and the heat and the passion of the moment to move forward and lunge for the mita, for the touch the mita, which would be a violation of an Issa Doraisa. Now Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah takes this very far. He says, forget it, the Kohen Gadol, let him stay in the Beis HaMikdash when they bury his wife or whatever it is, and he should not participate in any shape or form in the escorting in the entourage to bury the dead. Rabbi Meir was the more liberal thinker here, and he said, well, let him take part in the Levaya as long as he never comes within eye contact of the entourage. You know, when they enter into a certain avenue, he is held back in the other avenue. Only when they leave that avenue and go to another one, then he's allowed to enter into that avenue. And he never gets close enough to the mess that we should suspect that maybe he'll make contact with the mess.
Can you apply his case?
Well, what we're going to see, Jerry, as we go along, as there's a special pasuk that tells me that El Min HaMikdash Lo Yetze. In other words, logically, if not for that pasuk, we could have allowed him to go and escort the mess. He doesn't have to touch the mess, meaning his mitzvah is not right now to come in contact with the mess. Again, burying the dead is itself a mitzvah, but the Torah says that's awesome. That's what it says in the Torah for a Kohen Gadol. To bury his dead is prohibited. If you're asking about escorting the dead, well, that he should be allowed to do, except for the fact that the Torah says min hamikdash lo yetze, that he should not participate in the levaya. Rabbi Meir understands that pasuk is only referring to a gzera, you know, to distance him from the levaya sames. But if he's distant, then we don't have to worry that he'll come in contact with the mita, and therefore the Torah would permit it. Now again, for a Kohen Gadol to bury the dead or come in contact with the dead, even in the case of his closest relatives, is a violation of an Issa Doraisa. Let's just read the Pasuk. And this is in Parashas Emor. The Torah says, I'll call nefashos meis lo yavo li aviv uli imo lo yitama. So the pasuk is about as explicit as you can get, that I'll call nefashos mes lo yavo. He's not have contact with any nefesh of a mess. And if you have any doubts about it, the Torah spells out li aviv uli imo, which is his closest relatives, and yet lo yitame. But then the pasuk adds another piece, and it continues, and it says umin hamikdash lo yetze, that he's not allowed to leave the Mikdash. Now, what we derive from this pasuk are two different concepts. One concept is that he continues to function as a Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash. And this has to do with a sugya called Onen. Do you remember what the word Onen means? Onen is somebody who just lost one of his close relatives
before the Kfur,
before the burial. So we have to know that in the context of this pasuk, Min HaMikdash Lo Yetze, that he remains in the Beis HaMikdash even though he's an Onen. And we have to see exactly what the laws that apply to a Kohen Gadol who's an Onen as far as Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Can he do the Avodah? Can he not do the Avodah?
Is that when they're pledging for Bar Mitzvahs at that point?
Correct. Now, the Torah tells us Min HaMikdash Lo Yetze is telling me something else. It's telling me that he should not participate in the Levayas HaMes. And that's what this brisa says. Tana Rabbanan min HaMikdash lo yetze. Lo yetze imahem. He doesn't join this group that's accompanying the dead to burial. However, the brisa says, Aval yotze hu achrehem. Not imahem with them. He's not part of the group that's taking the dead body to burial. But he goes behind them. He's like behind the lines. Ketzad. How far does he have to be behind the lines? Maybe it's Dalet Amos. I don't know. How much is it? And the Braisa answers, Heim Nichnasim. Once they turn the corner, they enter into a different avenue. Hu Nigla. V'az Hu Nigla. Meaning then, he can show up in that avenue where they vacated. Niglim. Now, he can see them in the next avenue, who nichnas, who nichse. He should cover himself, meaning he should conceal himself. He shouldn't be around. They should not be able to make eye contact with him, nor him with them. And this reflects the shita of Rabbi Meir in the Braisa. And then the Mishnah continues, again, all this is in the name of Rabbi Meir, v'yotze ad Pesach Shar Ha'ir, meaning he's allowed to continue with that skipping and jumping around and escorting the dead up until the Shar Ha'ir, to the gates of the city. Once the entourage with the dead body leaves the gates of the city, then it's an open area till they went to the cemetery, and therefore he cannot play this hide and seek game. Then he has to drop out at that point. That's Rabbi Meir. But Rabbi Yehuda says, Eino yotzi min HaMikdash. Rabbi Yehuda takes this pasuk literally. And the pasuk says, Min HaMikdash lo yetze. So the Gemara says, Shapir ka'amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda really is correct. I mean, when you read the pasuk, it clearly indicates that he's not allowed to participate in any shape or form in the Levayas HaMes, because the Torah says he has to remain in the Mikdash. Rabbi Meir, is going to turn this around, and he's going to say, well, Rabbi Yehuda, the way you're reading this pasuk, that he can't leave the environs of the Mikdash, Ihachi, Lebeso Namilo, does it mean he can't go home to his house? He has to remain in the Beis HaMikdash. He can't take this pasuk literally and say that he can't leave the environs of the Beis HaMikdash. That's ridiculous. Nobody says that he can't go home. Ella, but rather, Hachi Kamar. This is what the pasuk means. Umin HaMikdash lo yetze, mikdushaso lo yetze. In other words, the Torah is telling him to be very careful about his sanctity and not to desecrate his sanctity. He, after all, is the Kohen Gadol. So therefore, in order to guarantee the mikdushaso lo yetze, he's got to do something that makes it absolutely clear that he's distancing himself from the mitah. They came under Islay Akeira. But since, as he's escorting the dead, there is a heker, it's obvious that he's falling back at a distance, because he's not going to ever show up in the same avenue, on the same street with the other Malavi HaMes, is lo asi leminga. We can be absolutely complacent that he will not come in contact with the dead. Now the Gemara asks about Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, why can't you accept Rabbi Meir? You're going to have to agree that Min HaMikdash lo yetze cannot be taken literally. He's allowed to go home. Ella, what? The Torah is worried about Kiddush Shaso. So why not accept the mechanism, you know, and orchestrate it the way that Rabbi Meir would orchestrate it? Are you still afraid that maybe he would come in contact with the dead? You can't even allow him the barest minimum participation in the Levayas HaMes. And the Gemara says, that's Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. Agav Merore, because Agav means as a result of Merore, his Merirus, meaning his heart is absolutely bitter. He's in a state of grief and anguish. Is Dilma Mikri V'Asi V'Naga. Don't even bother allowing him to participate even from a distance in the Levayas HaMes, because he might just lose it. You know, he can't control his passions, his desire to come in contact with the mess. Is therefore, we have to be worried that in the structure of Rabbi Meir's orchestration, says Rabbi Yehuda, he might still come to touch the mess and contract tumor. Let's be more strict about it, be more machmir, and tell him they should not participate in any shape or form in the Levayas HaMes, even from a distance. And from the Gemara, you get the impression that the Machlokas is about, you know, psychological possibilities and statistical possibilities. To what extent are we afraid that, despite all the precautions that Rabbi Meir insists upon, says Rabbi Yehuda, he still might become so overwhelmed that he'll run and jump and touch the mita. I remember, you know, there was a tragedy of immense proportions in Har Nof. I lost a chavrus of mine in that tragedy. It was a terrorist attack, two terrorists, Yimach Shemam. And I remember they made an announcement at the Levaya that no one should touch the mita. And the reason for that is that everyone was so in a state of passion, of anguish, that there seems to be like a natural tendency in that case to want to lunge out and touch the mita, as if, I don't know what it means either, as if you're connecting with the dead, you know, you're saying your last goodbyes, or maybe you feel it's going to elevate you, even though it's metamim tumas mes. But that's what Rabbi Yehuda is worried about. You know, in that state of mind, the Kohen Gadol might just lose it. You know, he'll do something that is prohibited by the Torah. So we have to be marchik him. Now, it's possible that Rabbi Yehuda's goal is to come closer to the pshat in the pasuk. Meaning, Rabbi Yehuda is not analyzing this halacha in classic gzeira terms, in terms of siyag, and, you know, to what extent do we have to be afraid of... He has the pasuk behind him. Now, again, Rabbi Meir already was the victor here, and he proved to Rabbi Yehuda we can't take this pasuk literally. But nevertheless, the pasuk does use a very extreme formulation, and Rabbi Yehuda wants to justify that. So when Rabbi Yehuda says Dilma Mikri V'Yasi V'Naga, that's not a psychological statement or a statistical statement. He's not arguing against Rabbi Meir because he disagrees about the psychology and the state of mind of the Kohen Gadol and what are the probabilities that he might actually come in contact with the dead. He's just explaining why the Torah gave such an extreme formulation and said, Min HaMikdash Lo Yetzei, don't even dream of leaving the environs of the Beis HaMikdash in order to participate in the Levaya, because there is some sort of possibility, as remote as it might be, that he might come in contact with the dead. Now here I'd like to read to you a footnote, or maybe even two footnotes, in the Misifta. First of all, he mentions the Gemara at the beginning of Yuma. The Gemara says there that for 7 days before Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol is removed from his house. In other words, he should not have a relationship with his wife. And and it means that he could have been at home with his wife, and that's where he'll be for 51 weeks out of the year. But for 1 week out of the year, he is separated from his house. So therefore, Rabbi Meir is right. The Gemara was justified in saying that you can't take this pasuk literally, min hamikdash lo yetze, which means that he has to live 24/7 in the Beis HaMikdash. He has a home, and he goes home every night, except for 7 days out of the year. Now, from our Gemara, it would seem that perhaps Rabbi Yehuda, not the way I suggested it, is deriving his halacha, not from the pasuk, but rather from his serious suspicion and worry and concern that maybe the Kohen Gadol would lunge and come in contact with the dead. She'im kein lo hayat sarach lasis tam ledin Torah. If Rabbi Yehuda derives it from a pasuk, and the pasuk is telling me that the Kohen Gadol is excluded from any shape or form of even minimal participation, then why does Rabbi Yehuda feel compelled to discuss Dilma Mikri Vyasi? So we try to suggest the reason why he added that is because he wants to show you that there is some logic to the literal translation of this pasuk, which again, Rabbi Meir was contending you can't take this pasuk literally. He has a home, the Kohen Gadol, so he doesn't have to live in the Beis HaMikdash. But Rabbi Yehuda wants to be close to the text, as we said before. But this note, he's quoting the Ran, is of the opinion that Rabbi Yehuda accepted Rabbi Meir's point. The pasuk of Min HaMikdash Lo Yetze could not mean that he's got to stay in the Beis HaMikdash. That can't be. Ela aflishi toso hakavana, the pasuk means mikdushas olo yetze. We have to do everything we can to guarantee that he doesn't desecrate his sanctity. El shehu sover, Rabbi Yehuda holds she'ein daibekach sheyase heker, that even with all this heker of the hide and seek, adayin yesh lachush, we still have to be concerned shemiyovel lagas. And the Ran says that the limud from this pasuk of the limud of Rabbi Yehuda is only an asmachta bi'alma, but ikar pasuk ba lomar, meaning the limud that we derive from this pasuk, is shekohen gadol oveg shu onen, that he remains in the Beis HaMikdash and he can serve even when he's an onen. Normally, a kohen onen is pasul, and his avoda is invalid, but in the case of the Kohen Gadol, the Torah went out of his way to say, "For who mi amigdash lo yetzay, to teach me that he doesn't leave the Beis HaMikdash because he continues to perform his avoda, even though he's an onen." V'chein das Ramban, v'hisig al Rambam sefer mitzvus shalomad me apostle glav gomur lotzeis me amigdash lo lavos mesa. Wow. The Rambam tells us that according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's an absolute lav included in the Taryag Mitzvahs that prohibits the Kohen Gadol from participating even at a distance in the Levayis HaMes. It's mamash a lav. So here's the machlokes between the Ran on one side of the equation and the Rambam on the other. Whereas the Ran understands that this pasuk is telling me dinim in avodas kohen gadol, we're going to only use it as an asmachta, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to completely exclude him from joining in the procession. The Rambam understood that this pasuk is telling me a lav, that if the kohen gadol decides to participate in this levaya, again, he hasn't come in contact with the mess, so he doesn't violate the beginning of that pasuk, which says, "I'll call the fashas mess lo yavo." Nevertheless, he violates the isur doraisa of bin amigdash lo yetze. This is pretty wild. It really changes your counting of the 613. There's a separate lav in 613 for a kohen gadol to participate in a levaya. And that's what the Torah is telling us. Because of Ramban, Shechoshu kan chazal biofer miyuchal shemi yitame. Why are we so afraid that he might come in contact with the dead? Mishum shek sheyovo lagas b'mes b'yoso nival al mes yesh lachush shevenei kvodo umoro shel kohen gadol lo yimchu bo. Wow. The Ramban adds another element to the equation. Nobody wants to start up with the Kohen Gadol. So if they see the Kohen Gadol, who got overwhelmed by his anguish and he lunged and he touched the mess, no one's going to stop him. Because they're in awe of the Kohen Gadol. V'yesh lachshol shebnei kvodo moroshel Kohen Gadol lo yimchu bo. Now furthermore, he says, hikpidu ma'od al tumasim neshu hefse gadol me'achashu hu ha'machaper al klal yisrael. We need the Kohen Gadol desperately. His avoda is going to bring the kapar for Klal Yisrael. If in this situation the emotions get the best of him and he touches the mess, then that's a terrible hefsek for Klal Yisrael, because we don't have the main machaper, the person who is the agent to bring kapar from Shamayim. He's not functioning because he's tamei, and we'll have to find some sort of replacement, but it's not the real thing. And then he quotes one other sefer that Yesh Mochicha Mikan Sheishnam Isra Torah Aboim Ligdar Esa Isra. He says that according to the Rambam, we see a breakthrough here, that sometimes the Torah itself sets up and formulates a violation only because it's afraid that you'll violate some other prohibition, a geder. Usually we say that the Rabbanan, that's their jurisdiction, that's their area of legislation. They should legislate siyag la Torah. Now we're saying the Torah itself legislates a siyag. And therefore, according to the Rambam, there's an isur d'oraisa if the Kohen Gadol decides to participate in the Levayis HaMes. And the Rambam's going to codify this in his counting of Tariyah. Again, it's all based on a chashash that maybe the Kohen Gadol will touch the mess. And here we have to add what we said in the Ramban, that not only are we afraid that the Kohen Gadol will be so overwhelmed that he'll want to touch the mess, but moreover, no one's going to stop him. As soon as they see his arm moving, normally, if I see that you're about to, you know, pick up Chaz HaTreif, I'm going to stop you. Don't you realize what you're doing over here? But no one's going to stop the Kohen Gadol. They're in such awe of the Kohen Gadol. So it's very interesting, because when we talk about being in awe of someone, let's say he's a Talmud Chacham, he's a Kohen Gadol, he's a Melech, that's a good thing. You know, you have to be Mekayim the Mitzvah of Kavod V'Yirah. But it also has a drawback, because there's no protection for that Adam Gadol. No one's going to... If he, for whatever reason, maybe unintentionally, you know, he's about to perform some sort of prohibited act, he doesn't have the built-in protection of the society that anyone else has, because of the fact that they're so much in awe of him. You know, if you talk about modern politics, this is totally inappropriate. You know, today no one has awe; it stands in awe of anybody. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. What were we going to say?
If nobody will stop him, then presumably there's no Israel.
Again, but the Torah is concerned with the desecration of Kedushas Kahuna for two reasons. First of all, because that Kedusha is on such a high level, and secondly, because we need him desperately. The whole Kapar of Klal Yisrael depends upon this one individual. We don't want to lose him to Tumah. So I'm not sure, Jerry, if our fear is because of the violation, and the Kohen Gadol is going to be in violation of a Lav D'Oraisa, so we have to build in a system of Geder, of Siag, of checks and balances in this case. And for two reasons. First of all, because he's overwhelmed by the anguish, and number two, because no one's going to stop him. Or maybe we could shift the emphasis here from the Avera of the Kohen Gadol, that's less important to us, than the loss itself, you know, the repercussions of his becoming Tamei, and what it means for Klal Yisrael, if the main Mechaper, the agent for Kapara, is now contaminated and he can't function. And also the desecration of his Kedushas Kuhun.
Even his Krovin, his five of the...
Right, we're talking about the seven Krovin. Because again, I don't know if you heard it, but the Pasuk says the following, I'll call Nefashos Mes Lo Yavo, Li Aviv Il Imo Lo Yitame, which is the exact opposite of what the Torah said in the previous pasuk when it was addressing the regular kohanim, and it gives you a list yitame, right, lachoso, etc. Yitame. Here it says lo yitame, and it gives the case of ovav ve'imo because kol shkeni shouldn't be mitame to any of the other relatives, because the greatest chiyuv kavod a person has is towards his parents. But the Torah says in Kohen Gadol's case, his kedusha is so intense that he shouldn't be mitame.
The Rabbanan or the Kruvur is the right, and the Levaya is coming from the Rabbanan?
I would say the following: the Chiyuv is the Rabbanan, but the Kiyuv is Doraisa. In other words, there's a mitzvah Doraisa of Kavod HaMes. The Rabbanan are going to define the parameters how and when specifically you fulfill that mitzvah of Kavod HaMes. So you and I might say, well, let's put up, do you know the word pachkavillas? You know what I'm talking about? Those posters that they put up? You know what I'm talking about? So that's my mitzvah of Kavod HaMes. And by the way, I think that's a serious, you know, consideration, that, you know, publicizing that so-and-so died with a little bit of words about the person, or, you know, Nafla Teres Roshena, if you're familiar with all the different nuskos, that is a covered up mess.
Well, so going around with the loudspeakers.
The loudspeakers, you know, to make sure more people show. All that is covered up mess. But at what point did the Rabbanan say, Ad Kan? Meaning, this is what the halacha requires of you. It doesn't require X, Y, and Z. It requires A, B, and C. Don't overstep your boundaries. You know, you can come up with all sorts of ideas. You know, I'm going to put it on Facebook, what else is popular? Twitter. Do you ever hear these words?
Yeah,
Baruch Hashem, you never heard of it. And I respect you for that. You know, today, almost all the news that you get on the thing, all these news are coming from Twitter and all those other things, because if a politician wants to blast out his policy on any issue, he doesn't have to say it out loud. He just puts it on Twitter. So I'm going to put on Twitter that Nebuch, my mother, passed away, and it's a great loss. You know, at what point do we say Ad Kan? So that's, and by the way, the same is true for Bikur Cholim. You know, a person will say, well, I'm very, you know, very concerned about the cholis in the hospital. I'm going to visit them 3 times a day. And Halacha is going to create guidelines. Again, if you follow those guidelines of the Rabbanon, you fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. But the guidelines themselves are the Rabbanon. So if you ask me about Levayas HaMes, it could very well be that Levayas HaMes per se is a chiyuv d'Rabbanon. But once you fulfill that chiyuv, you gain a mitzvah d'oraisa of Kavod HaMes. It's interesting, the Rambam holds that if you have a choice between Bikur Cholim and Nichum Avelim, so if you would ask me, I would maybe, well, I wouldn't know the answer to this question, but maybe I would tip the scale in favor of Bikur Cholim. The Rambam says Nichum Avelim. Why? Yesh bo mishum kavod achayim v'kavod amesim. That what Nichum Avelim has above and beyond Bikur Cholim, it's not just Bein Adam L'Chaver to be Mafik Tzaro Shelha Avel, but it's also Kavod HaMes. Now that's a phenomenal breakthrough, to say that when I come to visit an Avel sitting Shiva, that's Kavod HaMes. Way out. That's not as simple, that's a revolution of sorts. And it's all based on a Gemara that talks about someone who died without any relatives. The classic case is a ger. Let's say a ger, you know, he's a widow, or he never got married, whatever it might be, and he has no children. And the Gemara says in such a case, we set up an, again, this is my terminology, an artificial base oven. We get 10 people from the community, they sit down, and we go to the house where that person lived, and we set up a base of it with Nichum Avelim. What do you mean Nichum Avelim? These are 10 people who are not related to the person who died. And again, that's why the halacha is very careful. Again, there are always exceptions to the rule that the Nichum Avelim should take place with Beis Shel HaMes. And in fact, again, this is more Kabbalistic, but the soul of the deceased, in some sense, for at least the first 3 days, is hovering over the bias. So when you come to a base oval, you have to keep in mind. That's why it's appropriate not to schmooze about the Toronto Leafs? What are they called?
The Maple Leafs.
You know, that's not what Nichum Avel is all about. People think, oh, you know, the Maple Leafs, you know, won the series, so that's what I'm going to tell Leo, he's going to be very excited. No, that's not what it's all about. You should be talking about the Mets. I remember my Rebbe Olam Shalom, Rabbi Nissen Alpert, I don't know if you ever heard of him, he lost his son, Yeshaya, I think he was 21. If you came into the Beis Avil, the law was, and Rav Alpert would not tolerate it, you could only talk about his son, who died. I don't want to hear anything about anything else. That's Kovod HaMetz. So it's a whole new dimension, a whole new perspective on Nichum Avelu. And that's why I say, to answer your question, Reuven, about Levayas HaMetz, that's a great mitzvah of Kovod HaMetz. Would it be Durabanan? It could be. But now the Kohen Gadol is in a bind because he's not allowed to touch the dead body. Okay, he won't touch the dead body. He's part of the escort, but he's not touching the dead body. No. The Torah says, Min HaMikdash Lo Yetze. Not only does the Torah say in the same pasuk in the Reisha, Li'aviv Li'ima Lo Yetame, that he shouldn't touch the dead, but Min HaMikdash Lo Yetze. Says Rabbi Yehuda, that means he's not allowed to participate at all in the Levayas HaMetz. Says the Rambam, if he does so, he violates a lot d'oraisa. I'll read it to you again. This is the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, and the Rambam writes, this is Lav number Kuf Samachay, that we learn from this pasuk, Lav Gomer Lotzeis Min HaMikdash Lelavos Es Meso. The very moment the Kohen Gadol walks out of the Beis HaMikdash for the purpose of escorting the dead, he may be very far from the dead, that is a violation of the law. The Yitziyah from the Mikdash is a violation of the law. And the Rishonim disagree. The Rishonim say that this pasuk is talking about the kashrus of the Avodah, the Kohen Gadol is an Onen. And there's an asmachta from this that we have to be very concerned about the possibility that he might come in, you know, in contact with the dead. And Rabbi Yehuda takes this to a very extreme case. We're afraid that he'll be overwhelmed by his mourning, and no one's going to stop him because he's the Kohen Gadol. You know, I was always wondering, you know, it says by Moshe Rabbeinu that Karan or Potov and people, you know, people were in awe of Moshe Rabbeinu. So I was always wondering, is that a great bracha? You know, it's very nice that Moshe Rabbeinu reached the level, the highest level that you know, Memtes, Shari, Bina, and so forth, the Kedusha. But is it a good thing that, you know, that these supernal lights were radiating from his forehead? And people just didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to handle it. So he covers it. Because Moshe Rabbeinu wants to have a relationship with his people. Again, Yisroel contends that he overdid it a little bit. Okay, now we go on to Nichum Avelu. So we're on Yutessam and Aleph, and we're continuing the Gemara. The Mishnah says, Kshu Menachem, when he goes to be Menachem Acherim, you remember he has to be flanked on the right by the Skan Kohen Gadol, the Mamuna. And on the left are the people. Tana Rabbanu, we have a brayso that goes into more detail about the Nichum Avelim of the Kohen. Again, now somebody else suffered a loss. Is Tana Rabbanu kishuhu over b'shuro l'nachem es acherim iskan u'mashuach sha'ovar b'yamino v'rosh beis av v'avelim v'chol ha'am mismolo. So this brayso adds a couple of points that we didn't see in the Mishnah. First of all, he's flanked on the right side, not just by the Skan Kohen Gadol, the Mamuna, but also by the Meshuach Sha'avar. Meshuach Sha'avar means that, let's say, for example, the Kohen Gadol cannot function at some point. For whatever reason, he contaminated Tuma, he's a Balkari, whatever it is. So what we do is we appoint a second string Kohen, and he becomes the Kohen Gadol Mashuach, which means we anoint him with Shemen HaMishcha, but it's only on a temporary basis. As soon as the original Kohen Gadol is feeling up to it, I don't mean that literally, but halachically he's now a kosher, So the second string Kohen Gadol, who served as a Kohen Gadol, Lama Zogin, for a week, now he becomes Mashuach Sha'avar. And the reason why he loses his status as the Kohen HaOved is because he was only there as a substitute for the Kohen, the Ikar Kohen Gadol, on a temporary basis until such time as the Kohen Gadol can come back and re-establish himself as a functioning Kohen Gadol. Now, by the way, I don't know if you ever had this experience of serving as a substitute. Have you ever had that? It's really difficult for many reasons, but the most difficult thing about being a substitute is that if you enjoy it too much, you're in trouble, because a week later, a month later, you're a has-been, and the main Rebbe or teacher comes back, and you sit on the sideline. You know, on a deeper psychological level, you in a sense, as a son, you harbor a resentment to the person who got well, Baruch Hashem, and now you're a has-been. In any event, so we have now on the right side of the Kohen Gadol two very important people. There's number one, the Skan. We call him the Mamuna. Right? He's in the bullpen waiting. If in event that the Kohen Gadol can't function, he will step up to the plate and take over for the Kohen Gadol. And then we have the Mashuach Sha'avar, because he has the status of a Kohen Gadol. And he writes here, Kasher Irak Kohen Gadol Psul Zmani. There's a temporary Psul, and he cannot fulfill his function. Now there's a Gemara in Sota that the Skan Kohen Gadol is the Mamuna in order to take over for the Kohen Gadol in event that the Kohen Gadol is possible. So what's the difference between Skan and Mashuach Sha'avar? It's a little bit strange. Here we see, it seems that the Skan and the Kohen and the Mashuach Sha'avar are two different individuals, two different persona. But the answer is that the Skan Kohen Gadol is sitting on the sidelines waiting, but he never actually functioned to replace the Kohen Gadol, because the Kohen Gadol had no psul. He's called the Skan. Now if, on the other hand, this Skan was called up to replace the Kohen Gadol, then he's called the Kohen Gadol Sha'avar, Mashuach Sha'avar. So all that we have here is the Kohen Gadol being flanked on both sides. Now, who's flanking him on the left side? Who's on the left side of the Kohen Gadol? Now, here the Braisa adds Rosh, Beis, Av. Now, the Kohenim were divided up into Mishmaros. Each watch, so to speak, would get 1 week. And there were 24, so they doubled it. And each group got 2 weeks, all told of the year. And these mishmaros would divide up into batei av. And each beis av, which is a smaller group within the mishmaros, had its own rosh beis av. Then we have the avelim themselves, because again, the Kohen Gadol is passing by the avelim on the, you know, the Kohen Gadol is on the right. I mean, to his right, he has the Skan and the Mashuach Melchama. But now who's on his left? Immediately on his left is the Rosh Beis Av. Beyond that are the Avelim themselves. So the Avelim are here. The Kohen Gadol is passing them on the right. They're on his left. And not only that, Kol Ha'om Mishmola. We keep the people back on the left. Fine. Ukshu Omed. Now at this point the Ovel is standing. Bishura Umisnache Meacherim. So I'm not sure if you ever saw this at a Levaya. What happens is that after the Kfura they go out of the Beis HaKvaros and there's a single file line of all the people who go by, and they are Menachem the Avel. We have a slightly different minhag. Yeah, our minhag is that the Avelim are on the move, but the Gemara, back at its time, and we'll soon see why, had a different minhag. in which the people actually pass by the Avel. Now, what happens in a case where the Kohen Gadol lost one of his relatives? Now there's an obligation upon everyone else to be Menachem the Kohen Gadol. So they, if you recall, we discussed that they will say Harenu Kaparascha, right? That we'll accept all the punishment upon us. So now the Kohen Gadol is not a Menachem, but a Misnachem, right? He's receiving Nechama. In such a case, the Skan Kohen Gadol is on his right, passing by and expressing words of Nechama, and the Rosh Beis Av V'chola'am Mismolo, they're on the left. So what changed now? First of all, the Mashuach She'avar is dropped. He doesn't appear here in the Seifa. And the Gemara immediately asks, Abba Mashuach She'avar lo osi gabe? Why should that be so? What happened to the Mashuach Melchama? He's also chayev in Nichum Avelu. My taima? And the answer is, Chol She'date Savar Kachadibe. There's an inherent friction or competition, almost like a jealousy, between the Kohen Gadol and the Mashuach She'avar. If the Mashuach She'avar shows up at this point in the Kohen Gadol's life, when the Kohen Gadol is in such anguish, the Kohen Gadol gets Chalishus Hadas. He begins to suspect that the reason why the Mashuach is showing up is because he's sort of happy in the fact that the Kohen Gadol is an Avel. So that's what I told you before, that on a deeper level, psychologically, the Mashuach harbors a certain resentment against the Kohen Gadol. And when the Kohen Gadol sees the Mashuach Melchama showing up for Nichum Avelim, he thinks that the Mashuach She'avar is harboring a certain joy. You know, he's glad in his heart that the Kohen Gadol Nebuchadnezzar. Amar Rav Papa Shmami no Mehamas Nisan Plas. From this brisa that we just learned, we should derive three different conclusions. Number one, Shmamina, right, from the fact that the Skan is standing flanking the Kohen Gadol on the right, and in our Mishnah it says that the Skan, or the Memuna as we call it, is between the Kohen Gadol and the people. Shmamina, hainu Skan, hainu Memuna. In other words, the same individual who's called a Skan is also called a Mamuna. They're all the same person. So the Braisa says the Skan stands on the Yamin. The Mishnah says that the Mamuna stands on the Yamin. And both the Skan and the Mamuna refer to the same individual. Number two, Shmamina Avelim Omdim V'chalam Ovrim. The Avelim are stationary and the people pass by to be Menachem the Avel. And that's what it says here in the Braisa, that who, meaning the Kohen Gadol who suffered, sustained the loss, Omed Bishura, and the Misnachemim Acherim, they're the ones who are going to pass by.
What does Bishura?
Shura means a
person.
Shura means a single file, when there's one person behind the other. That's called a Shura, a line. Now, what's the chiddush here in number Beis, in the second chiddush, is that it's not the Avelim who walk through the people, the way we know it to be, but rather the Avelim are stationary and the people pass by the Avel. Ushmamina, and the third conclusion we should derive is Avelim l'smol ha-menachemim he-ma-omdim, that the Avelim should be to the left of the Menachemim. That's what we saw in the Braisa. Now, the Gemara says the following. Don't think that it was always this way, that the Menachemim would pass by the Ovel, and the Ovel was stationary. Tanur Rabbanan Barishona, the original custom was, Hayu HaVelim Omdim, V'chol HaOm Ovrim. So that's what we saw here in our Brisa. This was the original minhag, but it's not the minhag that we're familiar with. Why did they discontinue this minhag of the people passing by the Ovel? Two families would fight over the right to go first. Let me pass by the Ovel first, because I come from a great family, or my family is such a great, distinguished family. Another family says, "Ani overes chila. My yichus is even greater than the other family's yichus." Is therefore this was a very dangerous, explosive situation that caused a tremendous amount of jealousy and enmity. Is this kidu sheyu ha'am omdim ve'ha'velim ovrim? So they changed the minhag, and now it's the Avelim who pass by the Menachamim. That's the minhag that we're familiar with. And now there's no reason to suspect that they'll be fighting, because no one's moving at all. It's the Avelim who are moving. When the Avelim are moving, they're not going to fight over positions, you know, where they position themselves. But if the people themselves, meaning the Menachemim, are on the move, then that's going to create a tremendous amount of friction.
It sounds like they got running back to do the avodah
up to Kevesh, because one guy knocked the other guy off. You know, it never ceases to amaze me how Chazal have such a deep psychological understanding of the human nature, and the harboring of resentment of two people that seem to be on the outside working together. You know, Chazal really dip below the surface. I mean, I have a member of my family that has a rule, so to speak: don't take a partner into your business. Why? Because he himself took a partner, and at the end the partner broke away from him and created a competing company, and he suffered tremendously from that. So never go into partnership. But the truth is that sometimes you have to go into partnership because you have no choice. You know, you can't do it on your own. So you have two choices: either don't embark on the enterprise or go into partnership.
I think it says somewhere you should go into partnership with your chavrusa, your Torah chavrusa.
They're what?
You should go into partnership with your Torah chavrusa.
In Torah, maybe it's dafka a good idea, you know, to have a partnership. But in business,
make your business partner your chavrusa. Take your assistant chavrusa that you learn Torah with and make that your business partner.
Because he'll never compete with you, because they have a love relationship that's cemented by the Torah that they learn.
I don't know where I've heard that, but Rabbi Rabinovich said that somewhere.
Partners in Torah, right.
I don't know where it's sourced from, but...
Omar Rabbi Bar Abba, Hichzir Rav Yosi es Hadoral Yoshno, Be'ir Tzipori, Shiyu Avelim Omdim, V'chola Om Ovrim. In other words, at what point, which rabbi actually changed the minhag and instituted the minhag of Avelim Omdim? Right, so our minhag is that the Avelim are on the move. Correct? The Avelim are on the move. But the original minhag was Avelim Omdim. Correct? Now, if Avelim Omdim, there's going to be this Misgaros, Miskodito Zubazu, but in Tzipori, they decided we don't have to worry about this. So let the Avelim stand in its place and the people pass by, and there's not going to be a fight for who goes first. Now, at this point, since the Gemara quotes the Takana of Tzipori, and this was made by Rabbi Yossi, the Gemara is now going to embark upon an entire discussion of Rabbi Yossi and Tzipori, many different takanos that he instituted in the city of Tzipori. We'll mention a few examples. Hiskin Rabbi Yossi v'Tzipori shalotei isha ma'leches b'shuk u'bna achreha. She should not allow her son to walk behind her. Mishum Maisa Shahoy. There was a case where the Ganovim, they kidnapped her son and they locked him up in their house. And when she turned around and she saw that her son wasn't there, she began screaming and crying. And one of them said to her, "Come with us, we'll show you where your son is." She went into the house, and I'm not going to tell you what they did to her in the house. So for that reason, they were misaken that she should hold on to her child, or at least have the child walk in front of her. Now we have another case, Omer Rabbi Bar Chama Iskin Rabbi Yossi, another takon of Rabbi Yossi, Shiu Noshim Misapros Bebeis HaKise. You know, they had outdoor outhouses. What do they call them?
Plumbing.
Okay, public outhouses. And normally in a Beis HaKise, you don't talk in a Beis HaKise. That's not appropriate. But he made a takon of the dafka, the women should talk, Mishum Yichud. Because that's going to scare away other people who might come into this outhouse and look for a free ride. They'll find a woman there. All right, I think we can stop here. We're on Daf Yutes Amud Aleph, and I'll wish everyone a great Shabbos. And we'll see about some of these takanos, and we'll learn a little about Yichud, and then we'll go to a little bit more to Nichum Avelim, and then we get to this main sugya of what's called Malchi Yisrael, Malchi Beis David. So that, B'li Neder, is our schedule for next week.
Sure.
Yeah.